Okay, hello, and welcome to Innovations in Education, the podcast where we dive deep into the latest trends in innovation in education and technology. I'm Kevin Hogan, Content Director for eSchool News, and I'm happy you found us. This episode, we look back on one of the biggest events in the EdTech calendar, ISTE 2024, which this year took place in Denver, Colorado. In this episode, we'll explore some of the standout moments, groundbreaking innovations, and key takeaways from this year's conference. As always, ISTE 2024 was a whirlwind of inspiring sessions, cutting-edge technology, and incredible networking opportunities. From new product launches to thought-provoking keynotes, there was a lot to unpack, so let's dive right in. Now, back in the old days, say 2018, it wouldn't be until now that coverage of ISTE would appear in your mailbox or on a web page. eSchool has turned that on its head. If you go up to the site and find the red banner up top at the homepage, that will take you to dozens of interviews, news releases, and other various ideas and insights that sprung from the conference. And while there was a virtual aspect to the show, I found it was the spontaneous gathering of people face to face that really proved to be the difference maker. Take this outtake of LA Superintendent Alberto Carvalho during a conversation between Cool Cat teacher Vicky Davis, Denver Super Dr. Alex Marrero, Dr. Karen Chesser, Carlanda Miller, and LEGO's Dr. Jenny Nash on what schools need to do to ensure engagement in their classrooms. Have a listen.
Kevin Hogan with eSchool News. Thank you, Vicky. And thanks to the panel. Really great conversation. I always enjoy all of your insights over the years, but having you all together in one place in person and not over Zoom just really kind of enhances it. So one question, you know, thinking about engagement and same at the same time where Alberto just last week, LA Unified decided to ban the use of devices, which you could argue these are the greatest engagement tools in the history of mankind, right? You just talked about your efforts with AI and all those uses of those techniques. And how are you going to do that without an iPhone?
Yeah, I know that that question is going to come up. You know, a mobile phone, a smart device is amazing. It brings a lot of resources, makes a lot of meaningful connections. The question you must ask is, at what cost? Are there deleterious consequences to students, particularly their mental well-being, their social emotional standing? And here's the truth. Even though there are a lot of there's a lot of ongoing research, the truth is that since 2014-15, the number of students declaring suicidal ideation, anxiety, stress, bullying, cyberbullying, insult to students, the transaction of drugs, including fentanyl, all done through the device. So to me, it's not the smartphone, because the smartphone is just a vehicle. An airplane is a vehicle, but you can turn an airplane into a weapon. It's how you use it, right? And I think these smart devices in the hands of students whose cognitive development still cannot decode the difference between utility and damage is a mistake. So what we have done, and it's twofold, I'm much more interested actually in the second part of the conversation that we had at the board last week, which created national news. Is yes, to a certain extent, is banning the use of phone during the school day, but having it absolutely open for the purpose of the utilization of the assets and the tools that we have. But during the school day, every student has a device in Los Angeles Unified. Actually, most students have a device at school and one at home. So the resources there, they can access it through the device. Second, I want kids to spend more time interacting socially as they should as children. Not just in the classroom where the constant complaint of the teacher is, they're looking at their phones. After the pandemic, kids came back to school, and it took us about a half a year to a year to get them to socially interact with one another, because they were in school still doing Schoology. What the hell is that? You're back. Act like kids. In the playground, during lunchtime, act like kids. Speak with one another. I went to a high school, and my board president has seen the same thing. We have 5-6 kids around the lunch table. They're all on the phone, and they're talking to one another via text. Insane. So it's a matter of balancing out, right? Use, utility, benefit, consequence. And I think we've gone too far in one direction. So it's about establishing a new balance. The second part is the kids did not invent this. There's real big profit behind this. So we are suing the social media giants for the harm they've done. They've developed powerful algorithms to captivate, attract, lure in kids, and then keep them there through digital predatory practices that they must be held to account. So the disproportionate investment that we have made post-pandemic in psychiatric social workers must fall on the shoulders of these social media giants. It is in part their responsibility. So I believe in the power of technology. I'm almost obsessed by it. But I also, as an educator, as a father, as a teacher, principal, superintendent, need to be one who says, toward what end are we doing that? And is it too much? And how do we balance that?
And Alberto, I want to make a comment. I was in Saudi Arabia 3 weeks ago talking about digital health and wellness at the state conference. All the parents there said the one thing that unites us in the world right now is we want our children back. That is, and the research really about learning and what happens with to working memory when a phone is sitting present. As a classroom teacher who uses technology and has written about cell phones in the classroom, I reversed my position this school year because absolutely, I want them out sometimes, but very rarely they'll have a device. So.
I can respond to maybe a yes and proposition here. So in our school district, actually before I got here 3 years, I was a superintendent in Northern Kentucky, Cincinnati as well, and that same issue, but they had created a policy that kids in elementary and middle school could not have students' phones out at all during the day, school day instruction, and in high school it was only the teacher. And it's been really interesting because, of course, in high school, we still have kids, we have them out a lot, but if you go in classrooms, especially our career tech ed classrooms, we have 14 career pathways now, kids are very engaged, you never see them, right? So when students are engaged in relevant, meaningful, authentic experiences that they feel connected to, that they have some sort of focus of a project or an experience that they know means something to them, and it means something to their community or their world, they're not as apt to get the phone out because they have work to do, right? They are engaged in agile thinking and creative problem solving and all of our portrait graduate competencies. So when teachers are helping create, co-creating those experiences with kids, we're not really seeing that. So yes, I think we have to put the guardrails until the kids understand and have the skills they need in order to make those choices. And we need to create more engaging, meaningful, authentic experiences. And the other thing is, I think it's a step for students not to have, you know, access to social media. And we're kidding ourselves if we don't think they do on their Apple Watches and their devices. But it also has to go beyond that because the vast majority, and we have a system called Safe to Tell in Colorado, which is when students can report unsafe, harmful behavior, things that are happening. And when kids are reporting that such and such is bullying a student on Snapchat or whatever, that's not happening during the school day. That's happening at night, that's happening after school, on the weekends. We have school 169 days of the year, plenty of other times for this to happen. And so that's why we've had to do more education and communication and talking with not just the parents, but sometimes I think it goes straight to the parents, but kids themselves about the, what they call it, digital tattoo that happens when you put things out there online, what that can mean to your future. How do we address bullying or anything that feels damaging and detrimental? How do we, if we're the messenger because we're sending that back and forth, or we're a witness and we're not reporting it, then what does that say about our own ethics? So I think the more we can get students to understand and have empathy with each other, the more we can explain to them, help them understand those decisions that they're making, and the more we can work with our families and communities. So yeah, guardrails, and it has to be much more as well.
Yeah, if I can, I commend Superintendent Cavallo's board. I called him the day after And just for the record, I texted him while he was responding.
You were in class, though.
The lead that they're taking is incredible. I, as a leader, will love to, but I'll share my reservations with it in a moment. We're also part of the class action lawsuit against social media giants. I see what's happening in our classrooms. I see it at home. The quick fixes, the shorts, the YouTube shorts, the Instagram shorts, students are just overstimulated. And I know it's going to translate negatively in the classroom, and sometimes we have to take a deep dive in an extension to a problem when students are going to want something so quick. So I see it already becoming a major issue. The reason why I'm going to watch and see and maybe even confer to see what happens in LA and other places is we, I mentioned in our opener, we're rebounding from the most difficult year to a very great year. Because we had a tragedy in one of our schools. And students and parents are immediate in terms of communication. Unfortunately, usually it's not the right communication in terms of the facts, but I don't see how our parents here in Denver are going to be okay with us cutting off that communication when there could be something. You know, swatting calls, you know, they're gonna bomb the school. Well, never the case, knock on wood. But those parents want to make sure that their child is safe. And it takes us X amount of minutes to make sure that we have the right communication. So that's what I am hesitant, and that resistance is going to be overwhelming. But if you ask me for the record, I believe it is the right move.
Of course, AI continued to take up most of the oxygen in conversations this year, from keynotes to sessions to the Hyatt Lobby Bar. And for good reason, obviously. I will say, though, that the discussions have made a turn away from the fear factor. You know, AI will take all the teacher jobs and every student now cheats, to the reality factor that this new technology can improve the way we teach and learn if implemented properly. Listen to BrainPop new CPO, Jay Chakrapani, describe what that meant for this legendary EdTech software and their new releases that were announced at the show.
Let's just jump right into it. Let's talk about BrainPop at ISTE in Denver. What's on the agenda?
Yeah, so we're really excited for this ISTE. I mean, this year we are introducing some really new capabilities and new features that will just make teachers' lives easier and will help students grow. So In our core offering of essentials, we're offering, building off of the success we've had and the love that we've had around our 1,200 topics and our movies. We know that engagement of Tim and Moby and Annie is not enough to drive student growth. So we've been really on a mission to say, how do we build and springboard off of our movies to really give teachers tools for differentiation and students a platform in which they can show what they know. And so we're introduced at leveled readings, where we now have fiction and nonfiction passages, grade leveled and lexile leveled, that can be delivered to students that key off of the movies. We're also introducing vocabulary builder that lets students practice their vocabulary with a grade appropriate leveled word bank that really align with our characters that they know and love. We're introducing grade level quizzes that go beyond multiple choice questions, really with these in technology enhanced items that mirror the format of what they're going to expect in benchmark and state tests. So it's what teachers and students have grown to love with BrainPop, with now a rigor that will make it just really easy for teachers and students to grow. So that's one big area. The second big area is what we're doing in BrainPop Science. BrainPop Science is a middle school science program that really is centered around allowing kids to make claims, collect evidence, and produce scientific writing that support their claims. And this is our first actual use of AI that's really, really significant. So I can go into that in a second. But Really excited about introducing sort of an AI-enhanced science product.
Hey, that was pretty good. We got about 7 minutes in before we mentioned AI. But keep going. Yeah, that is the lure.
That's a topic, right? Yeah, I mean, listen, I think there's a gold rush for AI. There's just a rush of everybody jumping into AI, trying to find how it applies to them. You know, I think we go back to the basics and we just say that what is something we can do now that we have this really super duper general purpose tool? What can we do that and connect that to solving a problem? And we know that in science, you can do physical labs, you can introduce scientific concepts, but really the thing that is required is to build curious thinkers that can take a methodical approach, a scientific approach to problem solving, and then showing evidence that they have gone through sort of the scientific thinking process. And that's great. But how do you do that with multiple choice questions and movies and sort of the current tools that are currently available, right? It's really hard to do. So what we've built is what we've called these investigations that are based on common phenomenon that kids would be interested in. And we've infused our characters into them. From these phenomenon, kids can do observations like, for example, the phenomenon is, why can't you unbake a cake, right? So that's the curiosity question. And then the kids actually look at a number of different content sources to really discover and make observations about why this is happening. They make a claim of why it's happening, supported by evidence in their observations, and they do a write-up. Now, this is great because it really scaffolds a student toward the scientific process, but that's really hard to grade. Like, you know, just imagine a teacher getting stacks and stacks of these things. And so what we're using AI for is to provide open-ended feedback, grading on open-ended responses and natural language feedback. So we've created these narrow models that we've trained on massive data sets of student responses. We have expert teachers sort of classifying and grading these responses, and we use that to feed a model that scores these submissions based on a rubric. And then from there, we're using generative AI. We're using partnered with Google on this. We're using Gemini 1.5, and we built our own prompt context on top of that to provide natural language feedback that the teacher can then deliver to their students. So we probably removed 99% of the work and that would be used to grade it, and a teacher just has to do a quick review to get things out to their students. So this is something that we're really proud and excited about to introduce at ISTE.
Yeah, and it's another example. I'm kind of picking up on this kind of evolution. I spoke, you know, 2 years ago at ISTE in New Orleans. There was maybe three sessions that talked about AI in the abstract. And then fast forward 12 months to Philly, every ed tech company has suddenly become an AI company, right? There's some sort of way that they ripped it in. So it went from that first year there was a fear cycle amongst educators who were being told that their jobs were going to be replaced because of AI. Nonsense. Then we have last year where was the hype cycle, where there's a good bit of nonsense as well. Now I'm hoping we're entering what is like the reality cycle. And part of that is that these technologies are as much for the educator as they are for the student.
Yeah. And it's interesting that typical technology cycle that you talk about, that I think, you know, the way that we are approaching it at BrainPop is we just go back to our core values, which is we've created a franchise and we've created products that just recognize that ideas themselves are interesting. And we use whatever techniques we can use to explain things simply for kids. Like, that is our core, right? And, you know, we use characters and storytelling to do that. Then we use streaming media to get it out to as many kids as possible. And now we're just using AI in that context as well, where we now have this very powerful tool, but it all comes down to, how is it best serving our mission? Is it to make teachers' lives easier, or is it to explain something easier to simply to kids? And if we keep that mindset, I almost think of it, it's not generative AI, but we're really thinking about it as integrative AI. Like, how do we integrate this new tool into the what you're trying to do and just make it easy for you to get what you need to get done? Whether it's, you know, learning this new material that's hard, or making it easier for teachers to do the administrative work so that they can focus on the deep work and connection, social connection that they have with their kids. That's how we think about it. So we distill it down to the basics when we talk about that.
I was always interested in how you seem to hit both ends. I call it the bottom up, but the bottom up versus the top down, in terms of the implementation of your curriculum and in terms of the implementation of your software, where you have districts who are adopting it, right? But at the same time, you can go online and see Tim and Moby as an individual instructor and kind of use that as a classroom tool there. Has that evolved? Where are you kind of in the state of play when it comes to schools adopting your technologies?
Yeah, I mean, I think our core is school subscriptions, right? So that is the dominant way that we're able to get our videos, our stories, our products and services out to teachers and students. But that has opened the doors to district level conversations, which has been really exciting for us. Now, and as well as we have products that go directly to teachers and directly to parents, but really our dominant subscriptions are subscriptions to schools and districts.
Okay. Yeah. Finally, I've been peppering you questions about what you're bringing to the table for ISTE this year. What are you hoping to get out of it?
I think we really want to meet with our fan base. We love connecting with our teachers that use us, and we love it when you come to the booth and get the selfie with
Moby.
Yeah. So I mean, we just want to be with all of the folks who love us, but we also want to meet the folks who have not used us and are curious about us, and we would love to just connect when you're there, so we can share with you how we're evolving from a sort of a video platform of fun stories to really a curriculum that can drive student growth. And I think that's the story arc that we want to share with sort of the broader folks, and particularly the teachers that don't use us today. So that would be great.
And as always, it was fantastic to hear firsthand about the experiences and insights of people working on the front lines of EdTech. The passion and dedication in the community are truly inspiring. And it's the incredible potential of emerging technologies to transform education, whether it's through personalized learning with AI, immersive experiences with VR, or engaging teaching methods with gamification, the future really does look bright. The key will be how we integrate these tools effectively into our classrooms. Listen to Susan Moore. She's the director of technology at Meridian Public Schools in Connecticut, during a panel featuring K-12 educators that were analyzing PowerSchool's annual educator report, a preview of which was released during the show.
Susan, staying short of on this topic, like, what advice do you have for CDOs, CIOs, your colleagues who are grappling with exactly what Hattie and Addison have said, but they're thinking about data privacy, anti-bias, cybersecurity, all those things?
Right. So I think both Addison and Patty mentioned, just good, known implementation is when you're trying to be forward thinking. You want to learn about it, you want to implement it, and then you want to evaluate it. And as we're talking about change management, you really want to look and make sure, how is this tool working to the benefit of our students and our stakeholders? And particularly in the role of CTO, there is a tremendous responsibility to be protective of our students and their personally identifiable information, right? Not just because it's the law, because it's the right thing to do. And so there are many models out there now that don't share information on that. So we can, to the large language models to train them. So we can look at models like that to implement with students that allows them to try out and become comfortable with using AI technologies with the guardrails still on. And isn't that what we do in school and we've always done in school? We create a safe space for students to learn and try things in a low-risk environment where if they fail, it's okay, and they learn more and they try again, right? So really creating for students and for our teachers a culture where they have this freedom to try things. It may not work. Well, guess what? That's okay, because you're going to learn from that and you're going to go back, you're going to try again, you're going to make that prompt better of the next time. But if we never ever give our students an opportunity to write a prompt and then edit the prompt to really get at the information that they want, we're doing them a disservice.
For our listeners, we'd love to hear your thoughts on ISTE 2024. What were your highlights? What innovations are you most excited about? Drop us a line on social media or send us an email. And thanks for joining us on this very special episode of Innovations in Education. We'll be back soon with more discussions on the latest trends and innovations in ed tech. Until then, keep exploring, stay curious, and continue to push the boundaries of what's possible in your schools. And again, be sure to head up to eschoolnews.com if you want to continue to dive into some of the latest and greatest things that happen at ISTE 2024. We'll see you next time.